welcome to the Family Alpha Podcast, a place where information is exchanged with the expectation that it is to be applied. I am your host, Hunter Drew, founder of thefamilyalpha.com, as well as co-founder of thefraternityofexcellence.com. Now let's dive into a discussion that can help you help yourself. Again, this is the Family Alpha Podcast. Now let's get to work. Of the Morning Brew with Hunter Drew on this lovely Wednesday, on this hump day, I have got three guests, the most at any one time on the Morning Brew. It's going to be awesome. And the best part is all of these are first time guests. So we're going to do a quick around the horn. I've got Noble Brown, Coach Joe Hart, and Allie Covington. Noble Brown's our savage philosopher. Joe is the average is the enemy, man. He does not like anything that is average. Be above average or get the fuck out of his way. And then Allie is the mom, entrepreneur, the fitness stud, and a self-proclaimed foodie. And I don't know what that is. Also, Allie is breaking ground. Just like Ed Lattimore was the first not white dude, Allie is the first not dude to be on the Morning Brew. So look at you, pioneer for women. Now, let's do a quick around for everybody to get to know everybody. Starting Noble, let's start with you. Who is Noble Brown? Where are you coming from, man?
Well, I'm in lovely Scottsdale, Arizona, and the sun's not up yet, so it's not yet 120 degrees this morning. And you know, aside from my day job in information security, I'm a student of history. I like to box, and I like writing philosophy and fiction. So you can find all my work at sociopathletic.com.
Excellent. Joe, where are you coming from? What's your background?
Currently live in New Jersey, unfortunately. Background, I coach competitive cheerleading, been doing that for 10 years. And my main thing is, as you said, average is the enemy, and I can't stand average. So if you give average excuses, I'm going to average my way out of your life.
I like your use, like the way I use the word fuck, like very interchangeably. You use the word average. Like I'll average
all the fuck out of your life. I got kids that dress up like me with the same shirt and put a beard on for Halloween and say that I'm Coach Joe.
That's so good for the soul.
It's pretty funny.
That's awesome.
All right, Allie, the pioneer, breaking ground.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for letting me be the first woman on here.
Thanks for waking up at the ass crack of dawn.
It is before the ass crack of dawn, let me tell you. In Southern California, Orange County, it's 5 a.m. here. I usually don't see this time unless I'm on an airplane or something. entrepreneur, mom, I have two companies. I have a financial planning company and a tech company that delivers fitness training. I've been a personal trainer for ever, it seems, my adult life. And so I know a lot about that, a little bit about business, and a lot about causing trouble.
Excellent, which is exactly what we need. Some people who are ready to make waves.
Well, you brought the right crew on this morning, I think.
I think so, too. So the way we all linked up and the way this whole thing happened is Chance Lunford, who is taking a sabbatical from social media, He brings together all the guests that he's had on this podcast. And I was fortunate enough to get into the mix with these, you know, fine creators of their content. And it was pretty cool. So the other day I was like, hey, I don't have a guest who can come on. And they raised their hand and here we are. Now, today is September 11th. It's the 18th anniversary of the tragedy on September 11th, 2001. And with all the lives that were lost, you know, with all the black mark that is left on this day, I kind of wanted to bring a message of positivity, a message of hope, a message of grind, and something that can kind of bring a little bit more light, more drive to this day instead of always being down and gloomy. And if you can hear me, but you can't see me, I don't know what's going on with the tech. StreamYard's got to fix their shit. So listen to the smooth voice of Hunter Drew while my guests actually get to show their faces. Now, with that, one of the things I wanted to talk about is, you know, and this goes to the lives lost. You know, a lot of people, they don't have the privilege of growing older. You know, they don't have the privilege of seeing what it is we're seeing in this modern day and age. You know, the way Twitter's connecting us all, the way we're able to see, just like this, we're having a group chat all over the country. It's amazing. unfortunately, this technology is also being abused. You have men and women who are saying the craziest things because they're behind a username and they're not going to be held accountable. You have men and women who are trying to be something they aren't. They're losing who they were brought up to be. They're losing their past, their background, because they're trying to be something they think people will like. And I want to talk about, how can we combat that? How can we make sure that people are keeping that identity and are able to actually express, you know, who they are? You know, instead of being a one or a zero, you know, Allie's like 1.12. Noble's like 1.15. You know, everybody's different. You know, it's not just this or that. So how do we push back on that? How do we keep, you know, genuine personalities? Because that's what I like about this group here. You're all fucking weird in your own way. And that's awesome. You know, like, I dig that, because, you know, you need a little more characters out there. So I'll toss this one to Joe first, because average, you know, being the enemy, how do we keep people from just trying to be that average and not stand out whatsoever?
I think it's going to be like some sort of, it's got to kind of come within. You've got to eventually realize that when you wake up every single day, that every day is a blessing, or at least that's how I try to think of every day. So like, no matter if I got to get up early or I'm going to have a late night or whatever it may be, I realize that each day is a blessing, and that I forget what I put the stat out. A couple hundred thousand people die every day. They don't see the next day. So in a sense, I get this new day. So I'm going to try to make the best of it. And with kind of touching on like these anonymous users, you know, faking, you know, who they are, I don't think it's necessarily anything different. I think people have always faked their way to whatever type of lifestyle they want. I mean, I know I'm younger, but I'm sure it's been around. It just becomes more relevant with social media. It's, you know, once people find out that, hey, this account's fake, or they don't actually live this lavish lifestyle or whatever, you know, they get blasted on the internet. I think just social media has kind of just made that more relevant, and it gives more people the opportunity to either, you know, promote a positive message or to promote a negative, hateful message. And the main thing is just being able to brush things aside and continue to, you know, be thankful for what you have and work for what you don't have.
Now, Allie, do you think that shame should be used more frequently to kind of make people be who they are? Because if I went and met you right now, who I thought you were should be who I meet. Like, I shake your hand, like, hey, nice to meet you. You are the person you say you are. It's not like you're some fat dude in a basement, you know, like neckbeard. Like, you are you. And, you know, one of the ways we're doing this is video. Like, if I went and met Noble or Joe, like, they are who they say they are. So maybe we need to shame more people. Maybe we need to start showing up at random houses like, hey, man, you said this, but you're living that.
Well, you know what? That's a really good point. A lot of people are doing that. And the whole fake it till you make it thing, I just don't agree. I've never agreed with. It just doesn't, there's no integrity to that. But the problem with shaming people is it just feeds into whatever trauma and grief is causing them to behave that way to begin with. So you probably will just get more of it when you shame people. But to go back to what you were originally asking about, with how do we maintain our sense of individuality in this place where we're constantly being rewarded for being somebody that we're not? It's, I don't know if it's hard. Maybe it is for a lot of people. It never occurred to me to be somebody that I wasn't, you know? But maybe that comes with age too, because social media didn't come around until I was in my 30s. until a little bit later. And I mean, Facebook's 10 years old. So I was well into my 30s, had my first kid by the time Facebook came around. And so I was already past that point in my life where I felt like I needed to behave like somebody else. But I can see how a lot of people, especially women, would, not to make it a gender thing, but women tend to be a little bit more jealous of other women, and they tend to want to emulate them a little bit more. I think there's a greater sense of, I see it in the timeline. I want to look like Beyonce. I want to have J-Lo's body. I want to have all, right? Instead of embracing who they are in themselves. So there's a huge sense of insecurity that's behind all of that faking it till you make it type of stuff, as though no one wants you as you are, as though you're not good enough. Do you know what I mean? And I think a lot of people have that feeling of not being good enough. And so they're going to sit behind a keyboard and have an anonymous account and feel that way and try to combat it with faking it, I guess, which is sad.
It really is. Now, you brought up something interesting, and I try to stay away from the whole gender discussion, but since you brought it up, I'll dive into it. Noble, the way women see physical display of characteristics, such as like, I want her ass, I want her legs, I want her stomach, I want her hair. Do you think men are trying to replicate the same when it comes to respect, when it comes to being a dominant personality? So online, I'm a leader. You will follow me. I do this men. But in person, they've never stood up in front of a group. They've never had to lead men. But online, they're allowed to change that. They can be the Navy SEAL, astronaut, whatever, because nobody's there to see the truth.
Well, there's a couple of things that we can touch on there, because there's a lot to unpack in what you guys have already brought up. First, you know, I like to dwell on the past, and you know, that's one of those statements that sometimes is seen as a negative, but I like to learn from the past is when I say that, and look at the examples of the past and look at the, well, something just popped up there. We got somebody in the chat. That's crazy. Sorry.
It's my first time on this. It's so cool. Like, I'm playing around with this thing.
and so my first job when I quit school to go to work was at America Online. And this was in 1995.
And you're talking VAOL?
Yes, the actual America Online. They used to have a customer service call center in Tucson, Arizona. I don't know if they still do. I kind of doubt it. And so I was up at even earlier than this, you know, taking phone calls from people that couldn't figure out how to install America Online software, that kind of thing. But one of the perks that came with that job that I wasn't supposed to abuse, but I did, was that I had online access to everybody's account information, including the stuff that, you know, billing and where they lived and that kind of thing. And, you know, back in those days was one of the first really widespread social media platforms. And you could get on there and you could chat with people, 23 people in a chat room. And the chat rooms were thematic. Some people, you know, made chat rooms around fitness. Some people made chat rooms around their favorite TV show. Some of them made them around, you know, general location. And, you know, so I would go into like an Arizona themed chat room and see a bunch of people that were nowhere near Arizona. And then I learned the concept, before they called it catfishing, of men pretending to be women and vice versa and so forth. And so this is not a new concept. And you know, the guys do it for nefarious reasons. You know, they just want, you know, well, I don't know what their reasons are, honestly, but you know, so when you talk about the whole, body dysmorphia and so forth, I mean, let's be honest, we all grew up watching Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone. You know, we wanted to look different as well. You know, so there's plenty to be said for both genders not being happy with what they are. The difference is, like, and this isn't a gender thing, the people that do something about it, and there's people that are like, well, it's easier just to role play. And whether it's acting like a leader or acting like you're an alpha guy or acting like you're a millionaire or acting like you're, you know, a bikini model, doesn't really matter. People have been doing that forever. And it's kind of an interesting phenomenon, because if you look at the amount of energy that it takes to run a successful con like that, you'd be better off putting that energy into actually your own self-improvement and your own identity. But for whatever reason, people get, they go down that wormhole and then they can't find their way out.
One of the comments was the gamer mentality, used to playing characters. And I don't even identify with that, because I never played games like that.
Well, I was a World of Warcraft addict for a long time. And that game started like 15 years ago. And there's a lot of that too. You have an avatar in game that is like this, you know, beefy, you know, warrior or whatever, or, you know, you can make a female character and she runs around in a chainmail bikini, that kind of thing, whatever you want. And then, you know, but you're strong in that game, you know, and you're rewarded for like sitting at that game for 12 hours a day and grinding it out. And then all of a sudden, like, you're somebody. Like, oh my gosh, that guy has the highest gear score on the server, or he was the first to kill that boss, blah, blah, blah. And it's ultimately meaningless in the real world. All you're doing is consuming right. somebody else's content and paying a subscription fee and, yeah. and wasting your life with it. But people, you know, they get a modicum of respect within a very small community. And that's, you know, wow. the ones that are where like my kids are into video. Well, my son is into video games, and where I try to steer his habit is into the content creation space. Cause the ones that are actually really, I consider successful at it are the guys like Ninja that are making $200 million a year streaming Fortnite, you know, and
the real thing.
Yeah. They're making stupid. Now those are the outliers. That's like the 1% of the 1%.
But even then, I didn't know that was the kind of money these guys made.
Oh yeah. But I mean, but there's only like 10 guys like that in the world that are doing that. And there's 500 million kids playing Fortnite, and they all have YouTube channels, and you know, it's like I'm just trying to help my kid get to, like, you know, his 100 subscriptions or whatever, you know, so he can monetize a little bit. But I want him to at least be thinking about that, like, okay, if you're gonna do this, at least try to make something with it. Don't just be a consumer, be more of a creator.
Well, it sounds like you're saying, how do I use the online world to make my real life better?
Right. Yeah. I mean, do what you like, but find a way to create something with it.
Now, when you, I really like the, so Ali, you were saying that you don't play games, and so it's going to be a little bit difficult to kind of identify with that, you know, to kind of like relate to it. All right. I get it, you know, because I, again, I've seen the guys, I have a younger brother, and like this whole like younger group that'll randomly message, and they're saying like, I was addicted to video games and I was doing this. And, you know, I think it's the same with online, you know, whether you get into the manosphere, whether you get into whatever niche group you're in, that username means something. But as you were saying, you know, what you were talking about, Noble, with trying to keep that con going, that scheme, you have to keep so many lies in order that I think that's a part of, you know, the mental issues people are facing, is that you're literally creating like a split personality. When you go on the computer, you have to remember you did this, you said this, you told people that you were that. But when you go back to your real job and your real life, you're not that guy anymore. And I think at some point it starts to come to a head, because your lies start blending, and you're in the real world telling a story that never happened. And those people are like, what are you talking about? You never did this. And you're like, shit, I told those guys that, you know, and you're trying to balance it. It's like you're bipolar, not bipolar, but you're mentally like
split. No, you might actually be onto something there with a bipolar disorder. And I think, I don't know if there's been any science, you know, studying that, but that's absolutely been my observation with people that, you know, you meet, because I, you know, like I said, I was in World of Warcraft. I was really into World of Warcraft back in the day. And like, you know, I was the general manager for a guild, and we would do raids. You got to organize, you know, 45 people together to go do this. And, you know, I already had like the leadership skills. I mean, I was an Eagle Scout as a kid and all that stuff. So it wasn't like, it was just sort of transferring that over to the online thing, but it absolutely kind of changes your mindset a little bit, because you're like, okay, I'm walking into the grocery store and I'm not this level 60 warrior that can kill everything in the room. I'm just a dude, you know? So like, what's, you know, it does kind of screw you up a little bit, because you're shifting back and forth. And the only way that it becomes healthy is if you spend as much time improving your real life persona as you do your online avatar. And that's where it's better to just sort of drop the anonymity. I understand people have to remain anonymous. And if we're going to fix one problem, it's the whole, well, we can deplatform you because we don't like what you say, and therefore you have to hide your identity online because you don't want to lose your job. You know, that's a problem that I'd like to see solved, and that's going to take a Supreme Court case or something to do. But I have some people that are in the scientific community, in the psychology community, that, you know, I follow on Twitter. And Hunter, I'm sure you do, and Joe and Allie as well. It'd be neat to get some of those people online and say, hey, you know, instead of a cigar guy speculating on the psychology of it, maybe Maybe somebody's got a study on this. I'd love to find that out.
Well, I have a master's in psychology, and when I was getting my, when I was in grad school, that wasn't in the DSM-4. There wasn't an addiction to video games at that point. But at that time, I saw my little brother getting addicted to video games. So I could see that that was something that was going to end up being in there. And I don't have the most recent version of it, so I can't reference it. But I can tell you that it absolutely would, it seems to be causing more of like a multiple personality type of disorder thing. And most of the kids that are, and I say kids because the human brain doesn't finish developing until age 25. So, you know, they're developing themselves into a type of psychosis in a way. So when you're seeing them have trouble differentiating between real life and the online world, that's real for them.
Yeah, but is it any different than the Instagram model who's addicted to putting a filter on everything and making sure she has the best lighting and you know, all that stuff just to get, you know, 1,000 likes for every post. I mean, you know, somebody once, I don't remember who said it. It was like, maybe it was Alexander Cortez. You know, somebody asked him, what is his favorite video game? And he said Twitter. And it's the same thing, you know? So psychologically speaking, like, I don't know if you'd need to call it a quote unquote video game addiction, but there's got to be some kind of psychological phenomena for being addicted to sort of the artificial ego inflation that comes with any of that stuff, whether it's video games, whether it's watching TV, whether it's, you know, you're into cosplay or dressing like a furry, I don't know, but anything.
He went there.
I mean, but, well,
yeah, the dopamine dump. Right? Well, Joe, getting attention.
So something I was thinking about as you were talking, Noble, and Joe, we were kind of talking about this prior too, is maybe this isn't the cure, but maybe this is something we need to be pushing onto people, you know, whether it's our children or whether it's, you know, other men that we're engaging with. Inside the Fraternity of Excellence, we have group video chats. And one of the things that we highly push is, I need to see you. I need to, like we're doing right now, I need to see the conversation. I need to hear your voice. I need to see your physique. I need to see what it is you're bringing to the table. And earlier I was talking to Joe about, he had shared a image of, he had the cheerleaders training. He said, you know, they're doing a workout. And he's like, yeah, I'm kicking their ass. You know, or they hate me or something like that. And I was like, that's awesome. But that is showing that is the life you are living. And all of us, you see all of our lives, you know, we're always putting up photos or videos and people will say, oh, I'm trying to protect my anonymity or how the hell you say that word. You know, that's why I don't show my face. In all reality, you're not showing your face because you don't, that comes with accountability.
Right.
And Joe, do you think that that will be something that needs to be pushed? Is like, hey, don't tell me you're doing this. Show me.
Right. That's something that's, I don't know. We're getting to a whole bunch of different topics you can talk up on.
But welcome to the morning brew.
I know, man. This is awesome. So,
more coffee for us.
We give the athletes, especially if they have a week off, they get a week off every, I don't know, they probably only get 3 weeks off a year. But they have to continue to condition and do other things on their week off to make sure they don't fall out of shape because it's a highly competitive sport. It's very fast paced and you take a week off and you're behind. So they have to send us videos. They can't just say I did it because now we're go past the anyone can say that I did X, Y, and Z. They have to send us a video of them actually going through their workout two or three times a week, whatever it may be. And if they don't get it, their whole team suffers. So I think kind of going that track of being able to see your face, I think that's a good way, you know, to say, hey, this is the life that I claim that I'm living. And then Allie was touching on the earlier, the shaming. I think it like how the shaming doesn't work for most people, but I think it's really kind of a mentality. Like for me, when I got called fat, that pushed me to the gym. For other people who get called fat, that makes them eat more.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's more of a mentality thing. I think maybe we become, with social media, maybe in general, people have developed a weaker mentality because they see X, Y, and Z and they want that. But after trying for 1 month or 1 week, they don't see any results. And they're like, well, I'll just go back to who I am, but fake who I'm trying to become as an online persona.
It's easier.
It's a whole lot easier. I mean, I'm thinking about what I was learning in school, like in health class when I was in high school. And then, you know, talking to some of my athletes, they're like, we're learning about body image. And I'm like, this is what we've come to. We're not learning about like actual health. We're not learning about what you should eat. We're talking about body image.
Body acceptance.
Body acceptance.
Help at every size. You're gonna kill people with that.
But I think we're down like an interesting path, because we're talking about body acceptance, but we're talking about body acceptance for people who are extremely healthy and then who are morbidly obese. I mean, we're getting down to that path where we're just accepting everything, whereas, you know, everything's acceptable. You can identify as you want. You can weigh 600 pounds and be happy, which is complete bullshit. But like, right. We're just down this path where everything's got to be accepted. And if you don't necessarily agree with it, you get labeled a racist. You get labeled as fat shamer. And then that's where some of these people end up going anonymous, I think, because, you know, they don't want to be labeled as that because they don't believe the way they think or what they agree or disagree with. And because it goes against the grain, you know, they get, quote, shamed or outcasted by a group because of X, Y, and Z.
So we're totally in Joe's wheelhouse here, because this is an average is the enemy thing. I mean, below average is the enemy, but below average is being normalized and being, you know, like, or any kind of derangement is normalized now, and it doesn't really matter what it is. And, you know, you can say that it's a straw man or it's a slippery slope argument, but we're going there. I mean, we're at the point now where, you know, pedophiles want acceptance and that kind of thing. And it's not healthy. I don't think and again, this is where I, you know, go back to the dwell in the past thing. And when I say that, I look at the standards that we had in the past, and I'm a big fan of looking at the rise and fall of Western civilization and what it was that got us there, you know, to kind of our peak, which I think was in the 1970s, and then, you know, what's led to the decline. And, you know, one of the things was that society had a different set of standards. And, you know, you talk about, okay, you know, the whole fat shaming thing. Well, you didn't have to shame somebody for being fat 50 years ago, because it was just, it's shameful to be fat.
Like, there was no
public discussion around it. It was just, God, look at that guy. He needs to eat a salad. You know, there was no debate over it. It was accepted that, like, okay, being
look
fat.
Look at Willy Wonka, how they portrayed Augustus.
Yeah, Augustus, you know?
Like, he was exactly. Totally, I mean, caricature they made fun of. Because look at this fat boy.
I watched that movie in the 80s, and it was like, okay, I don't want to be Augustus Gloop, you know? So, but all the personality traits in that movie that we make fun of now are celebrated. I mean, Mike TV is this, you know, narcissistic television junkie. Well, that's every Jack Weed with a YouTube channel now. And then you've got Veruca Salt, you know, the gold digging, you know, attention whore. That's, I mean, it's just, I don't know about the gum chewing chick. That was kind of like,
not really that bad. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. You know, but the rest of it was just like, you know, we used to have standards for how people should behave, and we just kind of threw them all out the window. It was like, all right, you know, we decided to make, you know, certain things okay. And then it got so deranged. And I think it's almost an insult to the groups that were legitimately suffering marginalization, you know, and now they're being lumped into the same category. You talk it, you know, to people that, you know, had to live through, you know, the Jim Crow laws and the civil rights era, and they really had to fight for legitimate rights that they were legitimately being discriminated against for. And then you have people that, you know, want to dress and drag, and they're like, oh yeah, I'm suffering the same plight as Martin Luther King. And I'm like, no you're not. You know, that's not because the black guy, he couldn't take his skin off, but you don't have to wear a dress, right. You know? So it's, and again, this is the kind of thing that's like, oh my gosh, you know, he's going to be called a transphobe for it. You know, like Joe is saying, like, now do I have to be anonymous because I think it's not the same, you know? And I'm not even saying like, okay, you don't have an issue, or, you know, and I'm not saying that that is necessarily right for people to quote unquote hate you for it, but don't act like society has to rise and fall with your standards. Society should have a standard, and we need to stop dropping it to the lowest common denominator.
I think it was the anti-bullying, all that campaign that just, you know, when we were kids, we got bullied. That's how we change.
It's a rite of passage. I mean, we all got bullied.
It's how you stopped being such an idiot. Really?
Yeah, those were the buoys, though, to keep you in check. Like,
right?
When you get picked on, don't do that.
And even so if your bully was just, yeah, I mean, even if your bully was a legitimate asshole, like, I mean, I still remember the name of the kid that bullied me when I was in, you know, fourth grade, you know? And it's like, okay, well, you know, yeah, I mean, the odds of me running into that guy from College Park, Maryland now are slim, but I'm pretty sure I could take him in a street fight now if I had to, but that's not the point.
You know? He's got a hit list right in the room.
Exactly. I've got like the marker and putting the lipstick on, you know, kind of.
The anti-bullying made us all mentally soft.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. Cause it did toughen me up. I mean, I went home the day after it happened and, you know, I'm crying to my dad, you know, and I'm like, well, this guy's like three times bigger than me, Poppy. And he was two grades higher and all this other stuff. He's like, and you know, my old man, he's like, well, what do you want to do about it? And that's the mindset. It's like, okay, you know, take some Taekwondo classes. I'll put a heavy bag in the garage and you learn to stick up for yourself.
That's right.
And, you know, because 9 times out of 10, a bully is going to find a softer target. And so, like, and that's really all you have to do. Like, don't be the weakest kid in the room and you'll be okay.
Just go be tougher. Right.
Yeah. Be just a little bit tougher. You don't have to outrun the bear. You have to outrun the slowest guy that the bear is chasing.
That's right.
I recently had this conversation with my son. You know, he was trying out and he was doing a bunch of stuff, and this kid was faster than him. And he's like, oh, you know, in an age of participation trophies where it's like, oh, good job, you fucking lost. I told him, I was like, no, you didn't train hard enough. He did. He beat you because he's faster than you. Get faster, you can beat him in a race. It's that easy. Cool.
Right.
He goes out, starts doing sprints, done. I did want to ask, you know, I do like anecdotal stories. So, Allie, you've been a trainer for forever, you know, self-proclaimed training as long as you can remember. From the beginning of your training till now, have you seen a shift in the mindsets of those you're training, or has it always been, you know, I want the magic pill, I want the immediate results? Has that always been the thing, or now is it different, or is there from VHS tapes to now you're doing digital streaming? You know, how has personal training evolved with people's health?
It hasn't. Short.
Very well. Moving on.
Short. Everybody wants the magic pill. Everybody wants to have it yesterday, now or sooner. Microwave society. They were microwave 30 years ago. They're still, well, I wasn't training 30 years ago, but 25. So close enough. And so no, nothing's changed. Now you stream it instead of popping a VHS tape. Everybody wants it easy. They don't want to have to work for it. And now it's easier than ever to not have to, especially with all the body positivity movement. So I don't see that it's any different in terms of the mentality.
So in the chat, one of the guys, and I'm actually going to pop it up. I've got to find a way to make it transparent so I don't block out Noble and Joe. But here we go, covering their faces. It says, let's go back further. This era is not the first time fat was celebrated. And he goes on to say that was a sign of wealth. And, you know, back then, being tan meant you were in the field. Being fat meant you were healthy. Being pale meant you didn't have to go and work. So,
but we're talking 500 years ago.
No, but even then, that leads into now. Now we live in an age where it is so easy to be comfortable. Like, you have to go out of your way to feel discomfort. We have climate controlled homes, climate controlled cars, climate controlled jobs, climate controlled schools. Nobody's facing the elements. The only time you face rain or heat or cold is if you get your ass kicked outside.
Yeah, but now being fit is more of a status symbol of wealth than being fat, because we've changed the food supply. We've changed the way food affects our bodies with GMOs and all of that. So not to get into the nitty-gritty of the science or anything, but it actually costs more to be fit now. Organic foods, supplements, things like that. So while it did used to be a sign of wealth, it's not anymore. It's a sign of being poor.
Well, you're... If we're using currency as the value, yes. But if you're losing hours of your life or months or years of your life due to obesity, well, then you're paying the ultimate fine, aren't you?
Oh, for sure. Don't get me started on what that costs you too, because you can be here all day. I can unpack all the math on that one.
Maybe we should do a show on that. Just strictly like, let's just dive into the math and just let you just rant for fucking 2 hours. And we're done.
I think it would be good.
A whole presentation on it.
she can do it. We had a Skype call almost a month ago, and I broke a major plateau just with like two pieces of advice she gave me. So get her on for that.
I'm so proud of you. That's awesome. Yeah. Thank you.
Finally got under 215. So
nice.
Yeah. That's fucking awesome. What's really
Thanks
cool
for the
too?
Shout out.
Is so, I was going to say, what's really cool too is how interconnected everyone is with helping one another. You know, we go back to, you know, being in that group, everybody's always working to help another person out. You know, everybody's looking to give a hand and you're like, hey, how can I help? Or how can I promote? How can I support? Whatever. And that goes back to the original point that one of the reasons I enjoy being in that group and having individuals like yourselves on is because I see you. I know, I quote unquote, know you. Because you're doing the thing and you're showing me you're doing the thing. So I want to support that. Because in this age of everybody is a binary, you know, one or zero username. No, you're actually individuals. And it's easy to support somebody who wants to win and who shares their real story, the success, the failures, the flaws, the features. You guys are doing that. So you want people to win. And I think that if we had more people sharing their face, we'd see more people succeeding. You know, you'd want to help. I don't want to help this fucking egg account who shows up. My name's M1596. Like, who the fuck are you? And you've never shared a photo of yourself and you've never shared a story. All you've done is retweet these other popular accounts trying to be like them. You know, like I can't support that. But just now, you know, Ali, you helped Noble because he's a man who's like, hey, I'm a real dude trying to do real things. Can you help me? And watching the sun come up behind you, man, it's like epic cool. backdrop. It's pretty epic backdrop right now.
Yeah, no, I was actually hoping it'd be up a little sooner because the lighting gets better, but I look more tan. And talking about that, but no, it really does make a difference. I you know, I had anonymous accounts online for a while, and you know, I realized that there's a pattern of behavior, and there's good people that are anonymous. Don't get me wrong, you know, and I think they're just trying to protect themselves from the you know backlash that comes with putting yourself out there, especially if you have a high profile job or a job that. You know, people can just Google you and find out, hey, look at this guy. But what I also realized, though, is that the worst of the internet are the trolls that sit behind the anonymous accounts and they have no skin in the game. They just, you know, every single time, I mean, I would say 9 times out of 10, somebody who criticizes you online is a dude who has, you know, an anime character as an avatar and, you know, hasn't produced anything of actual value. You know, and because it's really hard to be a critic when you're a creator, because you understand what went into somebody else's piece of work. You know, I mean, I'm a self-published author, you know, go buy my book, right?
Like how that's at the ready. You were prepared for that.
I had Sarah Beth bring it out here. Actually, she's texted me earlier. She's like, you need anything? I'm like, yeah, I forgot about my book. But that's the thing is like, if you're going to do that, people are going to you know, they're going to relate more if they can see you because, you know, as a creator, as somebody who's, you know, I'm taking the risk, you know, like people, you know, people from my job could see this and be like, well, I don't like that guy's opinion. I'm going to send him to corporate security and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I mean, you know, it happens and it's just, you have to be, okay, I'm going to put it out there and take that chance. And I'm going to respect the other people that are doing the same thing, you know, because I mean, you know, Joe's right there with it. Like he's a coach. People are going to be able to connect the dots and see who he is in his business and who he is online. And maybe he says something that's not politically correct. And then, you know, is he going to get backlash for it? Look at what happened to Jack Murphy. You know, I mean, it's terrible what's happening to people with it. And you have to decide to put the spear in the ground and say, no, I'm going to stand with the people who, you know, want to be able to have their own opinion and not get persecuted for it, you know, especially, I mean, if, as long as you're not advocating any actual physical harm to anybody, have whatever opinion you want. I don't care.
I always say that you don't have to agree with what I have to say. You don't like, you could come up with an argument, but I'm not expecting everyone to agree with what I have to say. And that's perfectly fine. That's the beauty of having your own opinion. But it's where the disrespect comes in from the random trolls and things like that. And that's when the block button becomes useful. But I kind of wanted to touch on, you know, for whoever ends up listening or is watching now, I get asked a lot how I kind of got onto this side of Twitter or what changed for me mentally to change both my finances, physically and everything. And I just honestly got tired of living the life I was living. I was recently married at the time, and, you know, marriage was great, but me, myself being individual, I was just unhappy with what I had become at 28 or 29 years old. So it's really kind of a mentality to shift and think, looking yourself in the mirror and realizing that, you know, this is where my life is now. I was meant to do more. And I think it's very important that if you want to create a meaningful online presence, you kind of eliminate as much negativity as possible. I call it detoxing the social media. Like, I don't follow much political stuff. I'm not big into politics. I don't follow anything sports related because it ends up being a distraction. I only follow like people like you guys and other people, not necessarily just in finance, but in fitness and in psychology and science, but who are trying to make a meaningful impact. Mm-hmm. And by surrounding my social media presence with people like them, they're putting out content that's in a sense trying to promote a positive impact on people. And so that in turn helps me put out content that's a positive or helps promote a positive, you know, influence. And then you are what you consume. So you consume shit, you're going to become, you're going to look like shit. So if I consume positive content, I'm in sense going to be more motivated to go get something done, to, you know, try something new, to take a chance on myself. And then I can promote what I've learned from that experience out to other people who may be experiencing the same thing. So
I think that was very well said, you know, especially where you saw, hey, this is not where I want to be. You didn't say this is my life sentence. I'm stuck here. Like, right. Look, I'm here, but I'm not content here. I've got to make changes to get, you know, somewhere else. You know, if I want different results, I need different actions, you know. Yeah. And that's really fucking cool. Cause that self-awareness, people view it as like, I'm always going to be overweight. I'm always going to be dumb. I'm always going to have a small follower count. I'm never going to write a book. You know, they, so many things that they give themselves a death sentence on. It's like, I get the fucking mantra of life is short, but there is so much time. Just start using it better.
Yeah. The self-defeating mentality.
Well, and I don't think
any of us identify with that.
I try to get in that headspace so I can relate to the guys that I work with, but I'm like, I am so fucking like on the next thing, but because I've been in that spot, I can go back to it. You know, you kind of like you don't want to, but you remember, like, I remember when I was a fucking mediocre average. Yeah. You know, and you know, Joe, you said people who disagree with you, who the fuck's going to disagree with the guy saying average is the enemy? Like, what's their counterpoint? Average is great. Get the fuck out of here.
I'm with everyone. I'm with all my friends. Your friends talk. So,
Allie, I did want to give you a quick shout out, and I found a way to make this thing more transparent. So now it's not blocking the guys down. But Tim Beckett, he said he lost 30 pounds. Allie has his food coach and trainer, and that was over 30 days. So you helped this guy make real changes in his life. That's really fucking cool.
Thanks. That is awesome.
That's what I love doing. I just love seeing that stuff because it's so cool. It permeates every other area of your life. That's what I loved about fitness when I first got started. It changes really your mind. It changes your family. It changes every aspect of you. And so to me, if you want to change your mentality and change the way you do things in any part of your life, start with the way you move your body. Start with what you put inside your body, because it changes your biochemistry. It changes, I mean, the way you move your body changes your hormones, which changes your biochemistry. It all changes the way you think. You know, you build new neurons when you exercise, when you move your body. What you consume in terms of your mental content while you're building those new neurons matters right. A lot.
And that gets back to a concept that you guys, here's your homework assignment, do some research on the scientific phenomena of availability bias. And Allie, you probably know exactly what I'm talking about. But Joe's talking about it. I mean, we're all kind of talking about the same thing. It's like what you surround yourself with. You know, everything you see, everything you experience impacts how you think. Mm-hmm. And it happens subconsciously. You can't control it. If I, you know, that's why, like, I'm out here holding up a copy of the book, right? So now you guys have that in your head. Like, hey, you know, maybe I should read that, you know, like, But it's marketing 101, but marketing is all about, you know, saturation of your day-to-day life with, you know, availability bias. And that is, you know, if all you can see on TV is McDonald's food and you hear the jingle in your head and you all just did now because I mentioned it, and, you know, or all you can, you know, think about is the Popeye's chicken sandwich, you know, and now you're all thinking about it because I mentioned it. It's going to change the way you think when you go through.
You made all my followers fat. Everybody's going to Popeye's.
I just gained
now.
10 pounds, bro.
Way to go, man.
I know, but see, that's what I'm trying to say is, like, it's, I mean, I'm just mentioning it here in passing on, but you're getting bombarded with this. Mm-hmm. And it is impossible to control all of it, 100% of it, but you can control part of it, and you can be consciously aware of the fact. And every decision you make, you have to pause and think, am I making this decision because I really want to, or am I making this decision because I've been influenced by something potentially toxic in my life, and therefore, you know, maybe I should do something differently. And that can be everything from the media you're consuming to the people you're living with.
Correct.
And that's where it gets really dark, is like, you know, some people have to cut ties with some very long-term relationships that they've had because they're living according to someone else's expectations. And that is going to mess you up faster than anything, because you can't get out of that.
Right.
You know, when you wake up every morning thinking, okay, well, I have to make so-and-so happy. But people are doing that, you know, and that myth is being perpetuated throughout society. You know, we have this happy wife, happy life. Like, oh, no, you know, like her happiness is her responsibility. You know, my job is to not be a complete jackass, for sure. You know, there's a difference. And like, that's what we do.
Don't ruin it for her.
We swing the pendulum too far one direction or the other. You know, we start out with like, hey, don't abuse your wife. Okay, good. That's a good idea. We're there. So let's get back to here. But it's not like wait hand and foot on this person, you know, and that goes husbands, wives. I mean, we can be gender neutral about that. Mm-hmm. But the point is that you can't just cater to everybody else's opinion of what you should be. And that goes for your personal relationships. That goes for all the marketing you're consuming. You know, no, you don't have to drive a Lexus because their December to Remember TV commercials are on the TV 24/7. You know, throw that stuff out. Just, you know, focus on, like, okay, again, this is where, like, I dwell in the past. Like, go read a book that was written 30 years ago or later or earlier, I mean, and, you know, and use that to kind of make that your influence, you know.
Yeah, as soon as you give your happiness over to somebody else as their responsibility, you lose all your power.
But I think people, you can't always control what happens to you, but, you know, a common phrase that's, you know, said on Twitter all the time, and I'm guilty of saying it, it's everything's your fault. And what I think people misunderstand is like, well, my dad used to beat me up. That's not my fault. And I'm like, I understand that, but it's how you react to it. You
right.
can control your reactions, which is not the easiest thing to do. That takes daily work. I mean, I constantly work on it. I've gotten a lot better at, you know, as time goes on. I've learned that, you know, if someone cuts me off on the road where I used to probably give them a finger and get pissed off, I'm just like, they must be having a worse day than I am, you know? And that's a mentality thing. If you can use that in every aspect of your life, you will realize that things get a lot more enjoyable if you just take responsibility for everything, even if you can't control it. You know, someone cheats on you. Well, I chose to date them. That it's not the easiest thing to do, but I chose to date that person. Or I got too drunk last night. Well, I chose to go out. I made that decision to go out with friends. And, you know, you just got to, people don't want to take responsibility anymore. And I think, you know, honestly, I don't touch into politics, but like, politicians don't ever have to take responsibility anymore. So people see these people who have money, have power, and they say, oh, they got away with this, they got away with that, I can get away with it. And then they end up on this downward spiral on their life where they can't separate kind of what we were talking about before. They can't separate reality from their fake reality they're living.
I love what you're saying about that. Going back to that, making a choice to take responsibility. Okay, I chose to date that person. They cheated on me. Now I choose to get over it and choose a different type of person. So along with that same responsibility comes the chance to make new choices and embrace every single moment in every day that we have, which goes back to Hunter's original. I'm trying to drag it back.
Full circle, I dig it.
To your original idea of this show this morning, which is, you know, embracing every moment that we have left, because it is 9/11, the anniversary. And I think that choices, to speak to what you were talking about, Joe, is the only way to do that. Taking responsibility for the choices and making every single one count. Not letting life happen to you, but actually directing it.
I think that's how we change all these issues that we're coming across, is just taking responsibility. Oh, I'm fat and someone fat shamed me. Well, I'm eating like shit, so maybe I should change that. Or like, you know, Hunter was talking about, oh, his son was slower than the kid doing sprints. Oh, I got to train harder. You know, right. That's what, when I'm coaching athletes, you know, I'm not just a coach. I almost feel like a therapist at times, even though I have no idea what I'm doing in that realm. And then I'm also, you know, sometimes you almost feel like a parental figure because their home life is broken. Mm-hmm. And so you're kind of trying to balance all these things while at the same time making them the best competitive athlete. So in my mind, when I go to the gym every night to coach, I'm not just trying to make them the best athlete. I'm trying to make them mentally strong and to really, in a sense, outwardly saying it, like, stop giving a fuck about what people think. Mm-hmm. Focus on you. You have
it's
to be
really
selfish.
Hard.
It's for them. I feel for them because they got a lot, like middle school and high school. What's going on is extremely rough, but that's my constant message. Like, stop caring about what other people think. It's going to take work, but I promise if you can just improve a little bit each day, your life is going to be so much better. You're not going to give a crap about that fat chick who's calling you some skinny bitch. Like, this is the stuff we're dealing with.
And, you know, do you actually really think that anybody can stop giving a fuck what anybody thinks? I mean, we're on the show because we give a fuck what people think. We're trying to help them and give them a message.
It's the proper amount of fucks to give, the appropriate fuck to give.
You're giving a fuck from.
Right. You care, like, in the sense that you care how you respond, you know how to conduct yourself.
Exactly. Right. So, like, I will care what my dad's opinion on maybe an investment I want to make, because I know my dad has been successful in certain areas that way. But I'm not going to care what some random troll on the internet says he thinks I'm doing right or wrong. So it's kind of like, you know, being able to take constructive criticism from the people who matter in your life and not giving a shit about people who actually don't matter in your life, who are not in your circle, who you don't really associate yourself with.
Well, and it's not just a blanket statement of they're my mom or my dad, so I trust everything they have to say, right?
Right. Right.
Like, I think maturity is that point that we get to where we realize that our parents were fallible. They don't know everything. And there are other people that can give us great advice and can coach us and can bring value to our lives that are outside of that family unit that we grew up with.
Right.
You know, and how do you discern who's the real deal? That goes back to that original conversation at the beginning of our hour of, you know, who's the fake one and who's got the real goods. Take some time.
It does.
So I'm a huge fan of George Bruno, and one of the things he told me was that a good host, a good, you know, interviewer kind of disappears. You three are dropping some serious fucking gems, and I'm just kind of like just letting it flow because this is exactly what people need to hear. You know, and I don't know if you're able to see the quote I threw up there, but from the chat, JB Godwin, he said, you know, you only live once is the wrong way of looking at life. It should be you only die once. The truth is you live every day. Mm-hmm. We're only going to die once. We should die well. And when you think about dying, what does dying well mean? Well, it means you lived well. People will look at that. You know, Noble, one of the things I really like about what you do and your message is you're always out doing stuff with your wife. And if you were one of those 600-pound men, you're never going to get those photos with your wife on top of the mountain that you hiked or the thing, you know, the event you went on, because you couldn't physically do it. So to tie this to physical capability and to living a life well, you've got to be physically and mentally strong enough to do things with your life. You know, sitting in the house and ordering food at your Grubhub, that's not a life well lived. So when you die, it's not going to be a good death. But if you go out there and you're on the mountains, you get to see the views from the mountains. There's a difference between standing on that mountain that you hiked and looking at it and Googling, what does the top of Everest look like? It's different. You didn't earn that. And you know it. Inside your soul of souls, you know you did not earn that view. So when I die, I want to look back and be like, fuck yeah. Like, that was awesome. A lot of fucking great things happened. I went out with a fucking bang.
Well, and that works metaphorically too. I mean, one of my favorite, kind of check yourself before you wreck yourself things that I tell myself is this a hill I want to die on? And whether that's like an argument I'm having or, you know, a decision that I have to make, is this worth, going 100% for? Because, a lot of decisions, really come down to that. People make mistakes and then they've invested so much in the mistake that they just keep on making it because they just want it to get, it's got to get better sooner or later. I'm already in. I can't just.
They double down.
You double down on it. It's like, okay, is that a hill you really want to die on? Like, are you okay completely ruining yourself and setting yourself back years, months, whatever it is, over whatever it is you're deciding to do? And that can be anything, whether it's a relationship, whether it's a business decision, whether it's, it can be a spur of the moment thing, like Joe talking about not flipping the guy off in traffic. I mean, ultimately that's a hill that you have to decide if you're going to die on, because maybe that guy that you flip off in traffic is a 240-pound professional boxer. And maybe at the next stoplight, he's pissed off and he gets out of the car and you have to decide, am I going to draw a gun on this guy? Is this really worth the whole, like, it started with getting cut off in traffic. Are you going to die on that hill? And I think that's what people need to start thinking about. Like you said, Hunter, you literally die once and die well. There's the whole metaphorical death of, okay, am I going to invest everything I have in something and die over this? What is it that's worth dying for? And it's like, okay, my kids, my work, my family, those are the things. Like, and if it's not that, then I don't know.
Well, you know what? I have a question for you. I don't know if it's a great question, but I have a question for you, Noble, because we know that to get anything over time, right, we have to keep doing the same thing over and over again for the results to compound, right? That's the true with money. That's true with fitness, true with a lot of things. How do you discern when it's time to stop? Because then there's the opposite of that is, well, if I keep doing the same thing and keep getting the same results, well, then that's the definition of insanity, right? So how do you know what your hill to die on is, and how did you determine that?
Well, that gets back to, again, I keep picking on Joe here because he's raising so many good points. But he talks about how he would ask his dad for financial advice. And that's the... Am I still on here? Okay.
Hunter wants to be the center of attention.
I was trying to bring his screen up. I was trying to make Noble be the main things we can hear.
That's fine. but that's the thing is, like, if it's one of these things, like you said, Allie, where it's a long-term investment and you're going to have to put in months or even years of time, that's where it helps to look at somebody who's a little older and wiser and who's done it, somebody credible. And that's the important thing, is somebody credible. Just because they're older doesn't mean they're credible. The gray hair is not a guarantor of credibility, but somebody who's actually got the receipts and can say, yeah, this worked for me. That's why I came to you when you said, hey, I'm thinking about doing some online coaching. And I'm saying, like, yeah, you should, because me and Sarah Beth want to see abs like you have. And I took your advice and it worked. And just like, I'm sorry, I forget the handle of the fellow that jumped in that said it works, So that's where you make that decision is like, okay, is this worth dying on? Well, yeah, because I saw somebody else do it, somebody that I trust, and I know they didn't fake it. And therefore, I know it's worth the investment because I have a predictability there. There is the odds are good. But if you don't know it, that's the hardest thing, I think, is, and those are the people that I admire the most are the Elon Musks of the world that they have no idea if some of their crazy ideas are ever going to work. And then you have to play the numbers game. It's like, okay, if this idea doesn't work, do I have 100 others that I can try? Because you're going to fail. But that's the hardest part there is like, you know, okay, I'm going to go out and stake my reputation on this, you know, rocket ship company and get a ton of, you know, funding and so forth. But if it doesn't work, the next time around, I want to get funding. It's I'm not going to get that.
Right.
You know? So you have to have the stones to go out there and do that. But that's a next level of thinking. And I'm not even sure I'm there yet as far as being able to predict something completely unknown and say, no, I know this is going to work, even though there's no path before me.
I've got a bit of that crazy in me. That's how I started my tech company 10 years ago.
I think you got to have some type of crazy. I mean, you got to determine at some point in your life, it may be over multiple experiences, but you got to decide, do I want to stand out or do I want to fit in? Honestly happy and comfortable with where I am? Because the people who stand out, your great entrepreneurs, your great fitness gurus, all these people decide to go against the grain in some realm.
Yeah.
And pushed away from what the majority are doing. I kind of say it like in whatever you're doing, if you're looking for some type of success, look at what majority of the people around you are doing and then do the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to get fit. Most of the people, I mean, we're at the point now, unfortunately, where most of the people around us are not fit. So yeah. What do? They eat out all their meals. They, you know, boozing heavy, you know, whatever it may be. So just do the opposite. I mean, it goes down to more than that. Obviously, you got to hit the gym, you got to do different things. But then, hey, I don't want to be broke anymore. Well, what are most people doing? They're buying cars they don't need. They're buying extra big houses they don't want. They're going on vacations they can't afford, all in the name of looking rich. They're keeping up with the Joneses. But the problem is the Joneses are damn broke. And so what do? You do the opposite. Instead of trying to nickel and dime where you can save money, you figure out ways to make more money, keep your expenses the same, and then you get ahead on paying your debt or whatever you want to do. You literally just got to look at what majority of people are doing and do the opposite in most cases. And you got to decide if that's the life you want.
I think that sounds really simple, but with marketing the way that it is, especially when and being in fitness and finance, there's a lot of marketing that's basically like, here, just do this. And we're going to smash some fat. We're going to burn this. And it plays to the need of the microwave mentality of I wanted it yesterday. And so I'm taking action too late and I'm not willing to give myself the patience or the 10 years that it might take to become really, really good or really, really fit because so-and-so did such and such in such a short period of time. And I love the fact that Tim dropped 30 pounds while we were doing our food coaching together. But I didn't walk into that saying, let's drop 30 pounds this month. It was, let's dial you in to become the best that you can be. And whatever the results are, the results are. But when people are inundated on a daily basis with marketing that is geared toward forcing their mind to focus on the opposite of what you're talking about, it's really, really difficult for them to sift through all of that.
Oh, it definitely is.
I think the important thing too, one of the things I like to tell people, because you know I'm on the other side of 45 now, is a lot of people think that, well, I'm in my 30s, my 40s, it's too late. You know, I didn't start working out when I was young. And I'm a guy who, I was small as a kid, I grew like 4 or 5 inches my freshman year in college. I got really, you know, fit and I started working out and it was great. And then I let myself go in my 30s and then I sort of unfucked all that, you know, right around the time I turned 40. And it didn't take relatively that long. And what I like to tell people is like, look at the theory of relativity. And I know that sounds really esoteric, but think about, you know, relatively speaking, for a 40-year-old man, 1 year is not that much of his life. You know, 1 year is relatively a small amount of time. Whereas to the 20-year-old guy, a year is forever. You know, I mean that year between 20 and 21, when you can finally throw out your fake ideas, like that's never coming to an end. But for me, between 45 and 46, that's going to be over like that because relatively speaking, I've lived more of those years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very real thing. So I tell people all the time, like, look, I know it seems like, okay, you're, you know, 320 pounds or whatever. I mean, that's about where I was at when I started. You can fix that in a hurry. It won't seem like it day to day, but you're going to wake up one morning and be, you know, jacked and tan and be like, wow, that didn't take long at all. And there's obviously ways to accelerate that and optimize that process. You can talk to somebody, you know, like Allie and get your diet on right. And I think that helps, because not only does the coaching give you the knowledge, it gives you the accountability. And, you know, that's the other benefit of putting yourself out there and putting your real picture out there and everything else, because people know you. And it's like, okay, I want to see that guy produce. You know, I have, like right now, I've got, you know, a few thousand followers on Twitter that are like, okay, when is this guy's next book coming out? When is his next article coming out? When are we going to see the next great thing from him? And it's like, that's accountability. It's in the back of my head all the time. It's like, okay, I got people watching me now. My kids are watching me now, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know,
they always were.
You know, Allie tells me to go gluten-free and try that for a month. I'm like, well, shit, I can't eat any gluten, because she's going to ping me in a month and be like, how'd you do? And I'd be like, ah, well, you know, I had six bagels the other day because they look so good. You know, like, no, I can't do that because I have a measure of accountability. And that's the benefit of good coaching with somebody that you trust, is like, they're going to check in on you and they're going to make sure like you're on the track. But most of it is because, you know, you're not going to want to fail in front of somebody. And that gets back to the whole shame thing. Sometimes shame is good. You know, I was ashamed at how heavy I was and what the role model I was for my kids. And that's why I kind of flipped the switch. But, you know, it's all about the accountability.
I think shame with hope works in tandem really well. But too often people end up in shame and they don't ever get the hope. They don't know where to turn. There's one guy down here, Anthony Migg, that asked about the constant struggle to deal with the effects and the avoidance of treating the cause. And to me, I think that there's to answer that really fast, because Hunter decided to bow out for a second. And now
my neighbor is knocking. My dogs are flipping out. I'm like, what the fuck's happening?
We can't hear any of that. That's good. But I think that avoidance of treating the cause, I think too many people, even that are coaches, they don't understand the real cause behind a lot of that stuff. So much of the cause is in our head, so not in our body.
This was my first time having to live jump out. Apparently the mailman brought a package to my neighbor's house and not mine. And he was delivering it. And I'm like, am I getting fucking robbed? Like the dogs are like flipping out. I'm like, oh my God.
You mean you don't have Ring?
You have what?
Ring?
The hell's Ring?
The, you know, the doorbell that has the camera so you can see.
No, my wife wants it. I don't.
Oh, okay.
But I'm in my shed and the house is over there. Oh. So all I hear are dogs. The wife dropped the kids off at the bus. She's at the gym right now. So it's just me. He's never asked me, but I'm sure like he had to have heard me walking to the house because he's on this side. So he had to walk past the shed to my front door. And he's probably like, what the fuck is he doing in there? He's got lights and he's got all sorts of shit, you know?
I can only imagine.
I want to touch on kind of like what Noble was talking about. Allie, you're talking about as well, as far as like results and, you know, social media. You're constantly bombarded with, hey, I made X amount of dollars per month this month, or hey, this was me 2 years ago and this is me now. We see the results. We don't see the process going through. So people think that the results happen overnight. And right. I always think that people overestimate what they can accomplish in a week or a month, but they underestimate what can be accomplished in a year. Yeah. Like I take a look at myself many times and I'm like, you know, there was a lot of areas where I failed, but I flipped my life from a complete 180 to where like I'm pumped to get up every single day. Like I've got a purpose. Whereas before, like I was like, shit, man, I'm 29 years old. I haven't done anything with my life. That's how I was feeling. And by, you know, just taking like, it's so cliche, but it's like we say, take action, like take a little bit of action every single day. If you do that consistently, those little improvements over time lead to a huge change in your life and to the lives of other people. And that's, you know, I think that's why sometimes Twitter becomes an echo chamber of like, you got to take action. You got to take action. Well, I'm never going to complain about people saying that because it's true. Sometimes right. I had to read that over and over and over again before I decided, hey, fat ass, I need to get up off my couch and go to the gym or, you know, I mean, I'm on, I just started Ajax Achilles program because, you know, I had lost some weight just by changing my diet, but I hadn't hit the gone back to the gym and working out. And I realized, like, I'm putting these kids through some brutal workouts. Like, I need to be putting myself through some brutal workouts. And, like, I don't have kids yet, but I'm hoping within the next year or so that we do. And, like, I want to be throwing the football with my son or taking my daughter to cheerleading practice or whatever it may be. I want to do all that stuff. I want to take them hiking. I want to, it becomes more about, not more, more about everyone else around me than myself. Like, right. Every day I'm pushing, I'm not pushing just for myself. I'm pushing for the future of my bloodline, whatever that may look like.
Yep.
You know, I look back and that's what my parents did for me. That's what their grandparents did for them. And so that's my motivation. So sometimes it's not even finding motivation necessarily for yourself, but for the people around you.
It's legacy.
Yeah, I was just going to say that Adam Lane Smith, if he's on here, he would have been dropping that, you know, it's all about your legacy, you know, creating what does that look like? And you were talking about your grandparents and your parents, you take from them also what worked as well as what didn't work. And you just make it better. And then your kids will take from you what worked and what didn't work. You know, I try to be the best I can, but I'm sure there are things like, I don't have a manual. I think I'm doing it right, but we'll see. And, you know, my son and daughter, when they raise their kids, my dad did this awesome. He was involved, did other stuff, but he sucked at like whatever that. I'm going to be better at that too. So now they're going to go higher and their kids are going to go higher than they did, which is higher than me. And like, you just set that trajectory up.
God willing. Well,
and Joe raised another point with regards to, you know, you see these guys that talk about how much money they make in a week. And it's like, why can't I make that money in a week? And you don't see everything that goes into that. You know, they didn't just wake up one morning and make all that money in a week. They spent years refining that process, automating that process, learning what they had to do to make that. You know, people ask me like, well, how long did it take you to write your book? You know, and I say, well, it depends on how you want me to answer that question. It took me a month and it took me 10 years. You know, I wrote the final draft of my book, what would be the final draft, during National Novel Writing Month last year, you know, 2018. But I have notebooks full of notes and full of earlier drafts that I've been writing for over a decade. You know, like it was like a whole world building process went into that. It was easily 10 years of work in the background. No, it wasn't like steady, consistent, wake up every day and write type Adam Lane Smith, I'm going to churn out 20 novels in a year, you know, process. But I there was time in it, you know. Now, when I put my butt in the chair every night and wrote 3,000 words a day, that's when it actually got done. But it's not necessarily that easy. I'm not saying you can't do it that way. Like, just wake up tomorrow, write a book for the next month, and then get it published. You could do that, but it also helps for people that just, you know, I want to be a writer. I don't know where to start. Okay, well, just write every day, put the stuff down on paper, you know, put the time in, and then maybe somewhere a year from now, 10 years from now, you'll have all the pieces you need and the confidence to do it. And then it'll get done. You know, I didn't realize I could write a novel until I had spent 4 or 5 years writing basically what amounted to lame fan fiction. And one day I was on this forum that talked about, it was World of Warcraft. Actually, it was back during my World of Warcraft addict days. And one of the reasons why the game was so compelling to me is I loved the story in it. And so I would write, I would have a character in the game, and then I'd write fiction about what his actual story was, not just what he was doing in the game, but like, what was his mentality behind it? What was he doing? You know, the people he was interacting with, blah, blah, blah. I was really immersed in it. And then I woke up one morning, took everything that I had written in this forum post and compiled all the posts together into one document. It was like 80,000 words. And I was like, shit, that's a novel. Like, I spent 4 years writing this freaking novel and I can't publish it because it's somebody else's IP. You know what I mean? Like I kind of pissed away. I wasted all that effort on something that I can't put my name on. But at the same time, it gave me the confidence because it's like, wait a minute, I wrote a novel. it's not my novel. I can't publish that novel, but it was enough to sort of hone my craft and practice and so forth to where I said, you know, I've got all these other ideas that I want to write anyway. Why don't I do that instead of pissing my time away on somebody else's content? I can do it with my own content. And, you know, there's a million ways to kind of get into that mindset. But that was kind of the turning point for me, was learning that I had the capability, you know, I just had to have enough confidence in my own material. And, you know, that gets back to the whole irrational confidence thing that Allie talked about, the fake it till you make it. Yeah, that's not always a good thing, but sometimes it is okay to be confident in something that you haven't done before. Just because if you don't have that confidence, you're never going to break through that plateau and get to that next level. You have to believe, like, okay, I believe that I can squat 300 pounds if I really want to. I believe that I can deadlift 500 pounds if I really want to, but I have to put in the work, but it is possible to get there.
I think that you need to put in the work, not just to, but when you think about that and go, okay, well, I want to squat 300 pounds. Okay, well, then just plan on training for it, just like the book. Well, then I'll just do a little bit every single day and be more consistent. I did the same thing when I wrote my book.
I was going to say, I like the quote, success begets success. It's like once, then this goes to Joe's point all the way back to that, is once you do one thing, it's easier to do the second thing. It's harder to go from 0 to 1 than from 1 to 5. Right. You know, you just have to do the thing. So for Noble, it was writing that book. He's like, oh, I can write these. All right, I'm going to write my own now. It was that easy, but you had to get to one. Once he's at one, bam, 5's easy.
Exactly.
You know, making that first sale, making that first, committing that first time to going to the gym. You know, there's that guy on Twitter who's very large, but he started sharing his fitness journey because he's like, I need to fix myself. I can't think of the guy's name, but recently he was doing the box jumps.
Yeah, I've seen him.
Yeah.
Dude, so you see, and he's like, look, I'm doing it. But somebody that big, who's, it's going to be so much harder than for any of us to just go to the gym. Like, all right, I need to dial in my program or to start Achilles. You know, it's easier for you because you've done, you've already had success. So you understand how to follow up with success. Mm-hmm. For him, it's like, you got to get that rock going. Once it's in motion, you can keep rolling it. But getting that thing started, that's where he is. And it's so fucking cool to see somebody sharing that, because you normally don't get to see step one. You know, people see step 30 and like, oh, you've always had this. You know, like, so Noble's book, you've always been an author. You've never had to work hard for this. Well, no, not really. You know, but you didn't see that because that wasn't a part of the journey at the time. It wasn't shared. Right. So we get to see this firsthand with this guy, which is really cool.
I think what's cool about his story is, and this is, I see him because he is a large guy and he's getting after it. If that's not motivation for you to like go do something with your life, I don't know what can be. I mean, I used to do, you know, when I was, you know, in my earlier 20s, I was big into CrossFit. Like, that was my jam. Like, I was extremely competitive. I would say I was one of the more top-notch athletes. But anytime that I wanted to take a break during one of the WODs and I'd see someone who was maybe significantly overweight who was pushing hard, that just made me want to push harder because I'm like, they're not stopping. Why the hell should I stop?
Mm-hmm.
You know, same thing with, you know, no matter, it doesn't even go fitness. Maybe people are trying to get out of this hole of debt so they can provide for their family. Like, okay, well, maybe, you know, just watching people change their lives keeps me motivated in a sense. I'm not, you know, their actions aren't my sole motivation, but it's just a little extra oomph sometimes on the mornings that you don't feel like doing anything.
Yeah.
There's always that, that self, not self-flagellation, but somebody always has it harder. How can you always just say somebody has it harder, man? That's just fuel. Do the mental trick. Have it make it like a little mental trick that you do to yourself. Like, look, that guy's doing it. I can do it. You know, after this show, like, my wife's in the gym now. I can't like not go. She's like, hey, I worked out today. What about you? I'm like, fuck, I sat in the shed all day and I wrote shit. You know, like, it's whatever tool you have to do to kind of mind fuck yourself. Use that as motivation. But you have, so going way back, you were talking about the definition of insanity, you know, and you're like, how do you know which hills and when to make a change and shit like that. For me, you know, I tried my relationship with alcohol has been insane. Like, it's always been like, I can go weeks without it, but once I have one, I want to fucking party. Shots, we're drinking by the bottle, we're having a great time and laughing. I've never gotten a DUI, I've never had like domestic issues. Like, I'm not an angry drunk, but I realized I kept on trying to be like that guy who moderates. Like, let's just have a sip of this. And my brain's like, no, fuck that, let's party. And then I'm just like, all right, let's go. You know, I realized at some point enough was enough. And I think everybody hits that point where you're like, enough is enough. For some people, maybe it's eating food. Maybe they're addicted to fast food. Maybe it's, you know, drug use. Maybe it's alcohol, you know, whatever it is. Enough has to be enough. And when you hit that point, instead of saying, you know, this is my life and I have to live like this, do things differently. I wanted different results, so I cut booze out of my life. And now things are much better. I don't have to worry about the, let's try to moderate anymore. It's like, hey, cool. Grab your seltzer, your lime, and fucking chill. You know, if it's food, at some point, you've got to stop driving to the drive-thru. Just drive on by. You know, sugar. You know, stop buying the candy. Stop eating little snacks in your car. Get rid of the bags that you have hidden in the car, the closet, the shit that you don't let the kids get, but you're pounding it. You know, enough is enough. And when you hit that wall, make a change or you're going to fucking die a preventable death.
Can I just say, I don't care if it's wrong. I want to go drinking with Hunter sometime.
Oh, dude, we'll have a great time. Like, I'm telling you, it's not one of those things where I'm joking. Like, I'm serious. Like, we'll have a fantastic time. Well, all right. We hit our first silence. So it is 9:25. Normally, this ends at 9.
I broke it.
You fucking ruined the conversation. We'll be setting our party date. All right. We'll start wrapping this one up. We all have things to do, and Joe's in now. So this is going to be a fucking great shindig. Let's do a quick around on what you guys have coming up, where people can find you and your products. If people want to, you know, drop some questions. So Noble might be asking about, you know, writing, Allie, your fitness programs, Joe, what it is you have going on with how they can be a little less average, you know, ways that they can do that in their life. They're going to want to reach you. So let's start with Allie, because you went last the last time for intros. And good job on the first morning brew.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It was really an honor to be here this morning, especially with Noble and Joe. My tech company is found at bodcompany.com. That's where Tim Beckett found me. And I don't promote it on Twitter because I just didn't want to get on Twitter to sit there and try to make money with like everybody else, but really to provide value. So you can find me there. You can DM me. I don't promote any financial stuff on there. You just have to reach out to me personally to be able to work with me in that way. But yeah, bodcompany.com.
Do you have any final points you'd like to leave the viewers with?
Gosh, where would I even start on final points?
Let's go with one to three sentence closing remark. 45 minutes later.
I know, right? How long do I have to say that three sentences? Just kidding. I don't know. I mean, you guys, we can do anything. You really can do whatever you want to accomplish. But the challenge is A, believing that you can, and B, really finding the people that you can trust to help guide you there. I think a mentor is hugely important. I think that I was arrogant enough for a long time and didn't really believe that I needed one and was too insecure to reach out. But once I did, I went to a whole different level. So I highly recommend mentorship coaches, just like Noble was talking about. And if you need to find one, reach out to me, DM me. I'll help in any way I can.
I love the theme of service that runs through all of us. It's like, look, we're trying to help you. Use us as tools to improve your life. Use the internet as a tool to improve your real world life. We cannot reiterate that enough.
I think that's the only purpose for it, actually.
Seriously. It's just another extension for us to be used to make us better.
Yeah.
Joe, final remarks, and where can people find you? What do you have going on down the pipeline?
My main platform is Twitter at the moment. Find me at Coach Joe Hart. I guess really the only product that I kind of offer right now is, you know, I teach people how to flip stuff as like a side hustle. That's my big thing. I like finding stuff for cheap in the area and flipping it for profit. So, Allie doesn't promote. I promote a lot.
You can promote me. And I'll give you
nothing's better than Noble. Noble's like, hey, so while we're talking, whoop.
I should have done that with my book too.
So, I do that. It's a video-based course. It's called The Art of Flipping. I'm just teaching people what I did to help earn more money per month to help pay off my debt. It's not the end-all be-all. It's not how to get rich. It's something that I enjoy doing in my spare time, and it's how I pay my rent, doing 3 to 5 hours a week. So I enjoyed that. I teach that. And, you know, down the road, like my main goal is I'm trying to make as and like you guys all are, I'm trying to make the biggest positive impact I can on as many people. Anytime people shoot me a message, I do my best to give them an answer that I think is relevant to them. And if I have no idea, I refer them to someone who could better answer. I'm not going to try to act like I know everything because I don't. And then like my last remark is, I think everyone, no matter how good you are in this moment, you're always meant to be more. I don't actually believe you ever reach your full potential, and that could be discouraging to people, but that's something for me that I'm always going to chase day in and day out. I'm trying to get to closest to that full potential mark. And, you know, if you're, if you're willing to get after it and you're willing to be consistent, you can do some great things in life. It's just, it's literally up to you.
You have to do though. Do the thing. Noble, last but not least.
Well, I've already shilled my book a few times, but I'm going to do it again. Amazon. I'll tell you what I will do for people who watch the podcast and stick around to the end of it, and send me a note on Twitter. If I can't, my DM's not open to you, let me know, and I'll open it up to you. If you DM me with the special code Family Alpha, the first three people, I will mail you a copy autographed free.
To
plug the book, but also plug the podcast. I appreciate being on here. Hunter was one of the guys that kind of was one of the first to boost me when I was a baby account on Twitter, and I'm in his debt for that. And so, you know, anytime he needs anything from me, I'm there, including at 4:30 in the morning for a.
I do appreciate that.
That's pretty much the best place to find me is on Twitter or on the website. And I do have another, the sequel to this novel is coming out. I'm hoping to get it out before the end of the year. So that's it. That's what I got.
We should do a show right before you launch that one. A to get maybe generate, get some more eyes on, but B to talk about the process of following up a story with another story, you know, going deeper into it, because my book is more of a program. It's not a story. So to me, that's interesting as all hell, like to read stories, because I've yet to create something like that. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, no, I'd love that. I'd be happy to do that.
And to those who don't know, I remember when you first started out, I don't know what we were talking about, but I was like, fucking A, like, let's go. And I shared it. And like, I pushed something that you were doing, and like, you totally fucking ran with it. And I was like, that is what I'm talking about. Like, you have to do the thing. Like, you've got to like stand up and make things happen for yourself. You give yourself opportunities by being squared away. And when there's an opportunity to make it, take an action, take it, make the jump, do the thing. Like, you have that moment, seize it. It's yours. And you fucking did, which is amazing. Oh,
and then my takeaway from that is like, be like, you know, Hunter. I mean, I owe it to guys like you and Alexander Cortez that saw something in me and pushed my product and my message. And I try to do the same for other folks as well. Is like, if I see somebody coming up who's, you know, I don't care if they've got 20 followers, if they're saying something smart, it's like, hey, look at this guy, you know, or look at what she's doing. You know, it makes a difference. All it takes is one person to have a little faith in somebody, and it sticks with them, you know, for a long time.
And Hunter, thank you so much for your support.
No, you my guys, like I said, I just brought you together similar to how Chance brought all of us together. You know, it's, you guys did all the meat. I was just the sizzle that, hey, here's a platform. But the content you guys brought, I mean, this is one of the best morning brews I've ever had. And we're on episode 27. And that's not like fluffing you. It's the conversation here. Like, people need to hear it. And to see three genuine organic discussions flow, like, and I have to repeat to those viewing, you know, if you're still paying attention, you know, there is no script. I basically said, hey, we're talking about this. Let's go live. That's kind of how it works, because I don't want it to be, well, let me check my notes. Okay, we're going to talk about this today. That's ridiculous. Like, no, that's not how real people talk. These are real discussions from real individuals that are relatable. And that's what people need.
Yeah, you guys were a lot of fun this morning. It's a good way to wake up. Thank you.
All right. To Noble's point on helping those who are trying to do good things. Today, the Men of Character Conference by @BillMazur, or actually @FutureInMind with 2 D's. It goes live today. Men of Character Conference, that's like 30 plus speeches, a ridiculous amount of content. He has it going live. It's free from today until the 14th. So jump on, watch those speeches, take notes. And if you want to actually get a downloadable copy, you're going to want to become a lifetime member, which has multiple perks. Jump on it. He's an awesome dude who is doing great things, trying to help others.
So it's again, starting right now.
Yeah, it's live now. I was checking out Twitter while we were talking, and I had to go over.
We should all hop over there.
Seriously, like just shift over. Keep the conversation going.
Yeah.
All right, guys. This is an awesome dynamic. You know, maybe we'll have to get this I want to say trifecta. I don't know what the four is called. The quadfecta? The quadfecta. We'll get the quadfecta together sometime in the future because this was actually pretty legit. So everybody tuning in, thank you. The sponsors of this show are below. We've got Ground Shark Coffee and Rugged Legacy Grooming. Both of them are kicking absolute ass. Go down. There are codes below. There are links below. Support the men who are supporting what it is I'm doing and the message I'm trying to spread and bringing individuals like this together. Huge shout out to Chance Lunsford again for making this, you know, these connections happen. So thanks for tuning in. You guys have a good one.